Bad news.
Bad news for the state.
Bad news for capital.
Bad news for patriarchy.
Bad news for all forms of domination.
Bad news. Angry voices from around the world.
Our monthly info show from anarchist and anti-authoritarian radio projects worldwide.
If these news are bad, I don't want to be good.
Welcome to the 27th episode of Bad News. Today, on the middle of October 2019, there's a lot of crazy shit going on worldwide. And yeah, maybe you're thinking, so what? There's always a lot of crazy stuff going on that ball. And that's true. But my personal impression is that we are facing a accumulation of things which easily could lead us to whatever. But for sure, they make it necessary to get up our asses. Let's take initiative in order to resist and maybe overcome the big machine called capitalism. Populists and fascists are rising up in Europe and worldwide. On many places, wars are going on, and the people which are fleeing from it are blocked at so-called borders by police forces, fences, walls, and whatever. People which are fleeing from living conditions caused by the so-called climate change are dealing with conditions which are even worse, because they have no right to seek asylum, although the countries which reject to help them caused a lot of the problems they are facing with things they developed, like colonialism, industrialization, maximalization of consume, and so on. So it's damned clear that we are fighting globalized problems which make it necessary to have a global perspective on them. In my opinion, projects like Bad News could be a little tool to accomplish a bigger perspective on global issues, even though they are only able to unfold a little part of their potential until now. So let's hear what the comrades from all over the world contributed to the October edition of Bad News and how we put them together. You're gonna listen to pieces from places on the world which nowadays are called Greece, Japan, USA, the UK, and a little announcement from Spain. From Greece, you will listen to an update about the trial against the fascist party Golden Dawn, evacuations and evictions of refugees, the fire in Moria, the biggest camp of refugees in Greece, and the change of asylum in the Greek state. In the second contribution, you will be informed about different anarchist projects in Japan and the resistance linked to the upcoming Olympic Games, which will take place in Tokyo in 2020. The interview was made by the comrades from Journal Luknia, based in Slovenia. The third part will be an interview about the current Turkish invasion of northeast Syria, done by a comrade from the Final Straw Radio, based in North Carolina. And last but not least, we'll have an overview about ongoing struggles like the current climate strikes, actions against WP UK, and upcoming events in the UK, delivered by the comrades from Dissident Island based in London.
This is bad news for October 2019 from Radio Zones of Subversive Expression.
Moria. Moria is the biggest camp in Greece, in Lesbos Mytilene, hosting more than 10,000 people, refugees and asylum seekers under the worst conditions. On Sunday, 29th September, two fires took place inside the camp. At first, the Greek media presented it as fire caused in purpose by the refugees. Later on, and after the announcement of the death of an Afghani mother and her newborn child, the workers of the camp announced that on Sunday afternoon two fires broke out. One outside the hotspot, which was extinguished in a matter of minutes, and the other shortly afterwards inside the hotspot for an unknown reason, but certainly not riots. The fire started near or in a container. It expanded rapidly and completely burned 8 containers and 12 in total. Confirmed dead are 2, one mother and one child, but they are likely to be more. Refugees rushed to extinguish the fire and police attacked with tear gas to chase them away as a fire brigade was coming. This angered the people who attacked the fire brigade. There have been incidents in various parts of the KYT with the police, which continue sporadically until now in the olive groves where there are scenes. People are evacuating the area and many are hospitalized at the Doctors Without Borders office located just outside. Also, many people have been injured and taken to hospital. The media silenced this announcement in order to accuse the victims and back up the police forces and the government.
No one is illegal.
Asylum seekers, the right conservative government with the absolute parliamentary majority is announcing little by little changes in the process of asylum seeking, judging by their attitude towards the oppressed and the early reports they are up to making the asylum process stricter and more difficult so that they restrict the efforts.
Evacuations and evictions. On September 20th, a new wave of evacuations and evictions against refugees in the majority families with school children took place in the center of Athens. The operation, which began around 6 in the morning, involved dozens of police officers from various departments. 90 occupants, 21 males, 33 females, 36 minors, were removed from the occupation of the 22nd Aharnes building, allegedly owned by a private individual, and 179 occupants, 67 males, 50 females, and 62 minors, were removed from the occupation, Surmeli Aharnes. Most of the evicted were sent in refugee camps, running under inhumane conditions, while others were held in prison. Petru Rally, facing administrative deportation. the state and the police proceed to the evictions in order to restore normality as a communication strategy while forcing refugees and families to live under uncertainty. The majority of the children were schooled in the neighborhoods near the occupations, something impossible for the children in the camps.
We use our voice as a tool to amplify our struggles.
Golden Dawn trial update. 5 years after the trial began, it is time for the top members of the Greek Nazi Party to court account. The ex-parliament members and top in the hierarchy of the criminal organization are called day by day during the month of October to apologize in court for the organization. The accounts follow the motives of the accounts that took place in the courtrooms all those years. From the lowest to the highest members of the Nazi organization, all choose as their defense to call refusal of participation ignorance, absence, deception. In that way, the accused cancel one another, depicting the decay inside the criminal organization. Few days remain for the Führer Michaloliakos to defend himself.
The following piece is about the anarchist struggles in Japan, contributed by
Poklicali ste Črno luknjo in njeno kontrainformativno mrežo. Po pisku oddajte svoj glas.
Japan, it's generally conservative country, in my opinion, it's been so. But now, the Abe Shinzo, our prime minister, and the leading party LDP, are pushing this agenda of neoliberalism and the nationalism at the same time pretty strongly. How you can see it is the 2020 Tokyo Olympic Games, and that's a big stuff for us. And the government or Abe, they're using it as a perfect excuse to first off cover up Fukushima or cover up any problems and try to gentrify the city. So basically, they are trying to make Japan complete flat market for everyone with the power of nationalism. And we are always seeking for the way to struggle against it. For instance, I am involved in, of course, I'm involved in more than a few movements in Tokyo, but I'm mainly involved in two. One is Tokyo Spring Homeless Patrol. Because we do believe that if the gentrification is going on and lots of homeless folks are kicked out from the park or streets and they are scattered around the city. Before we had Christian aids or charity movements, but we didn't really have it from the anarchist side. We had from the communist side a little bit, but we kind of separated. And we made our own movement to walk around in the city around the night and hand out either maybe food or sleeping bags in winter. It's very cold there, or cold tea or cigarettes sometimes. And the second stuff is the new community, the new collective that we started last year in August. So it's almost 1 year anniversary. It's called TKFO. TKA4 in Japanese, it stands for Toei Koenji Apato 4-goto. But Toei Koenji K Apato A 4-goto 4. So TKA4. Here this place we are it's both of the political center. At the same time, it's an artist center. Artists can come and work on their works. We have 5 members in a collective. Actually, 4 of us came to Ljubljana 2 years ago, and we learned a lot. So we kind of learned from Ljubljana or Metelkova or Rog or those squatting culture and brought it back to Tokyo. So I'm really proud to be here and talking about it right now, actually. I'm really thrilled. Here we have a collective and we are trying to make everything autonomous. We have events. Or you can have exhibition for your art, and we are trying to reconnect the art and politics, which has been divided in this neoliberal economy system. Well, it's not even about anarchism or anything. First off, they are basically, we had Olympics in 60s as well, Tokyo Olympic Games, and we had the stadium perfectly functional, but they are trying to make it bigger and new one, and that is also used for the excuse to in Aoyama there is one national big stadium, and they try to break it down and rebuild the big one. And on the way, many people were evicted from their own houses, or some homeless folks got kicked out from the park. That's very problematic. But also that stadium is all covered by the tax, right? And who's making money out of it? It's not even the Tokyo City government or anything. It's the companies, like, in, you know, throwing the money into it, and they're gonna take everything back. So we are actually kind of hoping in this TKFO, because our building is supposed to be like torn down after Tokyo Olympic Games, because it's owned by the Tokyo metropolitan city governance. So they said, like, okay, you can use this place, but until Tokyo Olympic Games, after that we will squash it. But if they fuck up this Tokyo Olympic fucking games so fucking bad, then we never know what's gonna happen. So maybe we can keep this place and go on. But yesterday, actually, there was a demonstration in Tokyo against Tokyo Olympic Games, because yesterday was the 1 year before the very opening of Tokyo Olympic Games, and I'm hoping that there will be more, and I'm hoping that more of anarchist comrades will jump into this movement.
For this special podcast episode, I spoke with Gunal Duze, who is a labor activist, math teacher, and a board member of the Kurdish Cultural Center in Chicago. Gunal was willing to take the time to speak on the current Turkish invasion of northeast Syria, some history that would be useful to keep in mind when considering current events in this region, the complex tensions of being an anti-imperialist in these times, and about the Global Day of Action on this Saturday, October 12th, in defense of Rojava and against this current invasion into northeast Syria, which has been brought about by actions by the U.S. and many, many more topics. She also talks about Rojava, the role that this region plays in the area, and some ideas about how to get involved against the current invasion. The audio quality for this podcast special is a bit low, so I recommend listening in a quiet place with headphones if you can manage that. So thank you so much for agreeing to come onto the show. Would you begin by introducing yourself for listeners' name, pronouns, pseudonym, whatever you like, and talk a bit about yourself and what you do?
This is Gülün Güzel. Currently I'm in Chicago. I'm originally from Dersim, but I grew up in Istanbul. Both cities are in Turkish border right now, but Dersim is part of Kurdistan. I worked as a waitress, labor organizer, and I did some other stuff before, but last 3 years I have been a math teacher in special education.
So we are here to talk about we're in a moment right now of shifting of power structures in northern Syria, Would you talk about what is happening in the region currently and what is some background that might be helpful for listeners to understand what's going on?
Yeah, that's exactly what you said. It's like very, very critical moment for the region. Trump took a step and said that they are going to take, they're going to bring all the troops back from the region, which have been there for, at the beginning they said it was for 30 days, but they stayed there for years. So we knew that what the U.S. government is saying and doing not necessarily has to be always the reality there. That's why we also think that maybe this action can change the reality and the troops will stay there for a while, at least for creating a stable Rojava against the threat from ISIS and the threat from Turkey, including the problems with the regime with Syria. So there has been a war for almost a decade that caused millions of people to change their cities, maybe in the country that they were in, or they needed to change the country or the region totally to find a safer place because of the ongoing war there. The Islamic State reality has been created by several other figures in the region too, and they have been trying to create a regime there that was based on their own norms of Islam. So beheading people, not giving any rights to women, trying to make everyone Muslim, genocides to people who are in the different sects of Islam or who are not Muslim. And Rojava has been there for a couple of years. It's the autonomous region on the northern side of Syria. So Kurds are actually the biggest ethnic group that doesn't have a country in the world now. In Turkey, it's like more than 20 million people. Of course, these numbers are debatable, by the way, because there has been an ongoing assimilation policy. You know, people were asked to change the location from their hometowns. They were asked to move to the different parts of the country that they were in. In the early 20th century, the Kurds were put into four different countries, namely Iran, Iraq, Turkey, and Syria. Most of them are in Turkey now, more than 20 million people. My numbers can be wrong, but I believe it's less than 5 million living in Syria. It's a bit more than that living in Iraq, and yeah, less than 3 million, I believe, or around that living in Iran too. So Rojava got established a couple of years ago on the north side of Syria as an autonomous region, who have been fighting against ISIS for years, and U.S. by pulling the soldiers back. This is creating like a power gap there that can be, that actually Turkey wants to fill really fast. The first bombing started today, so this is our biggest concern, what is going to happen to the whole region after U.S. pulling the soldiers back. We know that it's not the U.S. is protecting those people there, but it's one of the reliefs for the people there that they are feeling, okay, because of the U.S., the Turks are not going to attack us soon because their soldiers are here too.
What role has Rojava been playing in the region thus far, specifically for like Kurdish folks who have been like made to adopt refugee status because of wars and anything else that comes to mind?
Sure, yeah. That's actually a very key thing about the refugees of the war. So Rojava is the Kurdish region of Syria, as I said before. It means where the sun sets, so it's west. It literally means west in Kurdish. There are three cantons there, Afrin, Kobani, and Cizre. And we probably remember Kobani from the Kobani resistance from 2014, September. More than like 11,000 SDF, Syrian Democratic Forces, people died there. They were killed there while they were fighting against ISIS. Rojava is critically important in that, in whole Middle East, being honest. For me, especially because of the gender revolution that they are trying to bring. Rojava, the region Rojava, was created with the ideas of equality for women, bringing more power to women, so empowering women and children, bringing more humanitarian human rights to the region, in like bringing more quality education. Of course, when we are thinking about what is happening there, you know, the imminent threat, of course, these are like the long-term plans. and also very ecological understanding of a life, like a sustainable economic growth instead of only economic growth. I believe the woman empowerment was the biggest part of this, including also the multi-ethnic representation, because there are not just Kurdish people who are living in Rojava. Actually, currently, the demographic of Rojava has been trying to change by the Turkish actions there too. So there are Arabs, there are Assyrians, and there are so many like different people who have been living historically in that region or still currently living in Rojava territory. And they have the representation in the political systems there too. So this is actually the picture of Rojava when I'm looking back there. That is why I believe an action, like any action that we are doing right now, is very critical. So this is like what happened in what was in Spain, you know, what was in Paris Commune and all the other places that we remember as the life-turning events for any community that can create a society that we want. I don't know how to define we, but I believe most of us who are listening to this have a very, very similar understanding about what kind of life do we want. A more equality based, you know, women and children first, and giving rights to disabled people, representation from different ethnic groups and everything else. So that is why what's happening to Rojava is very critical right now.
So you spoke about the Global Day of Action, and that's going to happen on October 12th. Will you speak about this and what you hope to see, and what can listeners sort of keep in mind about this day?
Of course. Yeah, thank you for asking that. I think that's one of the most important things right now. So the Global Day of Action for Supporting Rojava is going to be on the 12th of October, which is this Saturday. So in the U.S., the couple of things we can do. In that action on 12th of October, we can be in front of the Turkish embassy, although it's a Saturday, or any place that we can be. We can have emergency last-minute actions, last-minute demonstrations. We can go to the neighborhoods in our cities that they have people there, so we can walk there and talk with them, distribute flyers to them to explain what is happening and why we ask U.S. presence in the region, what can it cause at the end.
Listening to this episode's UK Bad News, the UK being the so-called Kingdom of Not-So-United Britain, and bad news being dispatches from the front line of direct action, brought to you by the one and only Dissident Island Radio, a radical DIY radio collective pumping out regular radio shows from London, the capital of capital. On Friday, 20th September, in by far the biggest global mobilization over climate change yet seen, the school students' movement mobilized over 4 million people on the first day of the Climate Strike Week of Action to coincide with the UN Climate Summit in New York City. Over 400,000 took part across the UK, 100,000 in London, 20,000 in Edinburgh, 15,000 in Glasgow, 10,000 in Leeds and Brighton, 5,000 in Manchester, and 6,000 in Bristol. The day was marked by the significant presence of organized labor taking action with the students for the first time, such as the BEIS workers, on all-out strike for a living wage. Croydon and Nottingham UCU branches also timed their disputes to be able to strike with the students as well. Check out Real News, that's reelnews.co.uk, for video reports of the day's actions. And you can also have a listen to episode 235 of Dissident Island, where we talk to a student climate action organizer about their work in helping to make the youth climate strike happen. On Monday, 23rd September 2019, the transphobic hate group WP UK, that's Women's Place UK, returned to Brighton to attempt to host another meeting under the cover of being a fringe event for the Labour Party conference. WP UK claimed to be a feminist group for the furthering of women's rights. Their views are essentialist, discriminatory, and hateful. They travel the UK hosting meetings to attract young women under the guise of feminism and then propagate violent anti-transgender rhetoric. The group has been opposed by queer, LGBTIA+, feminist and anti-fascist groups around the country. They even keep their own glory wall on their website documenting the counteractions that have taken place against them. WPUK then use the media as a tool to wrongly distort these protests as acts of intimidation or violence against cis women. This is a political strategy that has been used by fascists and abusive people since the dawn of time. It is the act of distortion, of projection, and of gaslighting. As with the early British feminist movements who did not recognize the struggles of women of color or the needs of women in the lower classes, these women at WPUK now intend to exclude, or worse still, target transgender women. Despite what WPUK and its members would have you believe, there is nothing radical nor feminist about their views nor actions. They are antiquated, ignorant, and incite structural, societal, and medical violence upon our trans community. Local trans and queer people came together as a community to protest the group at the Juries Inn waterfront after WPUK's first venue, Friends Meeting House, cancelled the booking as a rejection of WPUK's views. On Monday, the 23rd of September at 5 p.m, the Old Stein was used as a meeting point for the Say No to Transphobia Brighton protest. Over 200 protesters gathered, which included trans and queer activists, Labour Party members, trade union members, feminist groups, and anti-fascists. Whilst the protesters waited for the official announcement of the venue site, they made speeches, handed out leaflets, and enjoyed music together. At 6 p.m, the notice went out that the BMECP, the Black and Minority Ethnic Community Partnership, would be the venue hosting the WPUK meeting. The protesters marched through town, waving flags, singing and chanting. Some protesters who did not march also went to the BMECP to counter-flyer attendees waiting in line. When the march arrived at the venue, protesters gathered near the entrance, which was already guarded by private security and police officers. An archway was made with a transgender banner, which read, "Transgender rights are human rights," above the entrance steps. Eventually, the WPUK meeting concluded, and members left sad and frustrated that their meeting had been disrupted, leaving as aggressively as they had entered. This aggression has continued since the meeting, by way of false and malicious media allegations against activists, community protesters, and transgender people. They have also promoted the erasure and the initiation and escalation of violence inflicted by police and private security at their event towards queer women, young people, people of color, and other marginalized people. For more information on this action and to help show solidarity, check out Queer AF Brighton on the usual social media portals. Next year, in 2020, London will see the return of the London Anarchist Book Fair, and that's going to happen in October 2020, with a firm date and location to be confirmed. And in addition to this, the Decentralized Anarchist Festival, which started in 2018, has just announced its dates and will be taking place Friday 1st to Monday 4th of May 2020. The ideal vision for the festival would be to see events large and small all across Britain and Ireland. The more events that take place, the more momentum the festival has, and in turn, the more people might get involved and come into contact with anarchist ideas. The whole becomes greater than the sum of its parts. In recent years, we have seen anarchist book fairs pop up in cities and towns across the UK, and it would be particularly good if those groups might organise something as part of the festival. But in practice, anyone could put something together, whoever they are and wherever they are. This is a good opportunity to get anarchist thinking and practice happening in the local community and outside the usual anarchist circles. Ideas might include reading an anarchist text in a local book group, organising a discussion in a local pub or meeting space, engaging the local community in a little anarchism in action, be it a solidarity action collecting for a food bank, a bit of guerrilla gardening, closing a street off for a party, whatever you think is best. There's an archive of events from the last 2 years on the Anarchist Festival website, but don't let what has gone before limit the possibilities. The potential here is endless, and the definition of what counts as anarchism can be at its broadest and most inclusive. The idea to do this came after feeling the absence of the London Anarchist Book Fair in 2018 and 2019. We couldn't readily replicate the incredible organizational work that goes into putting the book fair, but those who wanted to could at least put on our own small events and keep the spirit of a communal yearly anarchist event going. It is cheering to see that there is an attempt to get the Anarchist Book Fair in London up and running again in October 2020. but with the previous success of our decentralized festival, we will feel it's worth keeping this initiative going too. By having our event in May, it leaves a space of about half a year between the two events, allowing plenty of time for planning and organizing. So this year, Anarchist Festival in the UK and Ireland will also fall on the weekend of May Day, International Workers' Day. In the past, this has also been a bank holiday in the UK, but the government has shifted the holiday to Friday, the 8th of May, so as to commemorate the 75th anniversary of VE Day, all of which seems like a fitting moment to go some way to reclaiming May Day's anarchist roots. For more information on the Anarchist Festival, go to anarchistfestival.wordpress.com. And for more information on the 2020 London Anarchist Book Fair, go to bookfair2020.org. You can also have a listen to Dissident Island episode 204, when we chatted to a member of the previous London Anarchist Book Fair collective in 2018, discussing the collective's decision to step away from book fair organizing, which resulted in a two-year pause of the London Book Fair, and where this leaves the movement. Many thanks to Real News, again that's R-E-E-L News, and Freedom News for the reportage that made this segment possible. And that's it for this edition of UK Bad News. I've been Chickpea, from Dissident Island Radio, a radical radio show based in the capital of capital, London, in the greater so-called kingdom of a not really united Britain. And if you haven't already, why not check out Dissident Island Radio's fantastic shows, featuring interviews on radical campaigns, direct action, political discussions, legal information and updates, and lots of awesome music. Go to dissidentisland.org or find us on the usual social media sites by searching for Dissident Island. And you can also subscribe to us on your favorite podcast app by searching, again, for Dissident Island Radio. And thanks for listening. Stay tuned.
Okay, that's nearly the end of this month's edition. I've only a small announcement to add. On the 4th of November, Rodrigo Lanza will face his first day in court. We reported about his case in a former issue of Bad News. Rodrigo, which was locked in for about 5 years, related to the so-called 4F case in Barcelona back in 2006, is now accused with the murder against the fascist in Zaragoza, Spain. He's held in isolation since his imprisonment at the 7th of December 2017. That's an appeal to inform yourselves about his case on one of the sadly rare resources and to get active. Solidarity means action. Or like Rodrigo wrote in an older letter, I continue to feel lucky because I know I can count on you, like you on me.